you've seen the things that AI can do, and if you're not on that track, because you know large companies, you're not going to be able to flip the company over from no AI to full AI overnight. It's not going to happen like that. It's going to be a multi-year transformation. If you're not on schedule, you're falling behind.
Welcome to Tech Talks, hosted by myself, David Savage, and powered by Nash Squared. So on today's show, we have got Rodrigo Liang. He is the CEO of Samba Nova Systems. So we're going to be talking about the main takeaways and recommendations for enterprise leaders who want to leverage, guess what, AI in their business. Anyway, before that, I'm joined by George. How are you?
Very good, Dave. Great to see you again. Great to meet you.
Yeah, the last two times that we've had you on the show, you've been at home in Glasgow. Not this time.
No. You find me not just in outside of Europe, but actually in India, which is great because I'm meeting some of our fantastic engineers who are based in Noida, which is part of Greater Delhi. So I'm taking in the sights and sounds and learning lots and lots about AI, actually, from some of our great competency leads.
Have you been to India before?
No, first visit.
First impressions?
Vibrant, noisy. The traffic is an interesting experience, but yeah, very welcoming people, very talented individuals, and you know, and just want to do some great work in technology, particularly. So yeah, interesting country. And we're just about to start. The election season has just started in India, so.
Oh really? Wow. Okay.
Really interesting. The differences and the similarities in terms of how democracies go about elections. Really interesting.
Well, look, I mean, this is going out on Monday, this episode, but we're recording on Friday afternoon from my perspective, Friday evening from your perspective. And yeah. Any plans tonight?
Tonight, a quiet one tonight. I think we have the annual day tomorrow with our colleagues from India. So they're coming to this hotel that I'm in just now. And we'll have a big party to celebrate all their successes. And I'll do a very short speech because I'll be between them and let's say they're enjoying themselves a bit more. So that's the big plan for tomorrow.
Well, you know, a Scotsman can certainly show them how to have a good time.
So. I'll certainly introduce them to a few good whiskies.
Well, look, thanks for taking the time to jump on. Let's hand over to Rodrigo and we'll be back afterwards. Today, I'm joined by Rodrigo Liang, co-founder and CEO at Samba Nova Systems. And you're joining us from the west coast of the USA. So good morning. How are you?
Yeah, doing great. Thanks for having me, Dave.
And look, Samba Nova, a business I've got to be perfectly honest, a business I wasn't overly familiar with prior to being introduced by your PR team. And yet one of those businesses, like many in tech, who are doing instrumental work, doing a lot of work for a lot of companies that people will be familiar with and maybe just go slightly out of sight of the public eye. So what do you do?
Well, Samba Nova, we're excited to be in this space. It's a seven-year-old company. We're still spinning out of some ideas that were being incubated at Stanford for a few years. Ultimately, over the past year, 18 months, people have become quite familiar with generative AI and what AI can do as they've played with ChatGPT and other similar technologies. But the needs that enterprises have for data security, privacy, controls, all the things that we know enterprises need in order to operate operate their business while introducing AI into that flow is significantly different from consumer. And so what Samba Nova does is bringing those core technologies around generative AI, bringing these trillion parameter models, bringing all the generative nature of the technology into an environment that allows you to have full control, deploy it in private, deploy it securely, and drive the transformation that AI is going to bring into your business in a way that's secure, private, and under your control.
One thing I can say with a degree of certainty at the minute is that a lot of firms in the enterprise sector are holding back from large-scale deployments where generative AI and AI is concerned. There are some exceptions. Life sciences, you can kind of point to as a sector that's pushing forward. but a lot of firms are looking at proof of concepts. One reason that I've heard for that is that people are waiting to see what regulation comes down the pipeline, and they don't want to retrofit some of that implementation or integration rather. But how big a concern when you talk to customers is security and privacy in perhaps making people just hold back for a moment before they go ahead with large scale deployments?
Yeah, it's one of the biggest concerns that we've seen now in the US, and we see it in Asia and to some extent in Europe, probably more towards Eastern Europe, as kind of those deployments for us. The Eastern Europe and Middle East are very aggressive today in getting those technologies deployed. Now, I'll put the construct here for your audience to think about, that when the internet showed up 25 years ago, a lot of companies were significantly worried about, for good reasons, about security and privacy. You know, data is going to be out there, and then people are going to hack into it, and all those were concerns. And the companies that actually decided not to actually jump on the internet as a technology that transformed their businesses ended up at a significant disadvantage compared to their peers. And in some cases, it was an existential problem for some of those companies because they would just became non-competitive. And so what we see right now is CEOs of some of the largest companies are facing this exact same dilemma of, I need to be able to actually get on this race because ultimately it is a race. You've seen the things that AI can do, and if you're not on that track, because large companies, you're not going to be able to flip the company over from no AI to full AI overnight. It's not going to happen like that. It's going to be a multi-year transformation. If you're not on schedule, you're falling behind. And that's happening every day. You look at the Asian companies, you look at the Eastern European companies, you look at the companies in the US. They are investing aggressively while tackling the exact questions you're talking about. Well, how do I do it safely? How do I do it so I don't get into problems with regulators? How do I do it so I don't expose data to the open world that I cannot do it? And so what we see is exactly what Sambanova does, which is we give you an option that allows you to have full control. We deploy our technology, hardware, software, in your most secure environments, in the places that you've already vetted so that you can control your data, knowing that over time, your world is a hybrid world. You're going to have your operations in the cloud, on-prem, on this colo, whatever. Those are all things, but what we see the most aggressive companies doing is they're bringing all this exploration, all the deployment into a secure environment first, right? So that they can see how things play out while not falling behind in the investment you have to make, which is, let me start unlocking the data I have and building models that understand my business better, because that's going to take years to transform my business from a no AI to a full AI corporation. And many of the larger companies are investing very, very aggressively in that.
Do you think one of the things that's driving this and driving the speed of change is the fact that this is one of the, this feels like one of the few times where it's not just a case that here's a new technology and people are beginning to implement it and then we're working out what it can do, but we've all been told what AI can do before people have really had a chance to put it into practice.
That's exactly right. I mean, to keep it, and again, I use the parallel with internet so much because if you look back 25 years, a lot of people thought the internet was just a web page. They just thought, hey, if I throw a www web page, that's the internet. And you look at today, how much of our business is powered by internet in a way that accelerates our business by 10, 100x, right? Today, we can get things from our company to customers 10 times faster than we could 20 years before, maybe 100 times faster. We can get a global scale from selling out of a garage, right? Which we could not possibly do before. And so you look at the scale and the velocity that business have been able to grow from small to big, enabled by a singular technology, which was the internet. And now most people, at least in Silicon Valley, where I've been for over 30 years, and having seen these technology transitions since the 90s, AI is at least as big, if not bigger, right? Because you can see some of these things that it can do and blows every day. And I've been in this business, someone was a 7-year-old company, and I've been in this business way before ChatGPT became something that most people recognize. And I'm still surprised every day by what this thing can do. And I look at, wow, it can do that, right? But if you're able to take the capabilities of these, technologies that are coming and translate them into workflows, it will make your business 10 times more productive. You're going to be 10 times more efficient. You're going to be 10 times more expansive in the way that you can attack the business, not too different from what the internet did for people 20, 25 years ago.
You mentioned the slight difference between your clients in the USA and clients perhaps in Europe. Obviously, Europe has maybe slightly different regulatory framework when it comes to things like GDPR and so on, where data is concerned. How do you see that playing out in terms of the market developing? Do European-based businesses have a slight advantage because of the concerns around security and data, or do you expect the American market to catch up very quickly?
Yeah, I think the constructs that are in place in Europe are the right ones. We've seen this play out over and over again, and I've had numerous conversations with the data privacy folks in the European Union around, you know, what's important for protecting our customers when deploying these types of transformative technologies. And so if you think about data privacy concerns, you think about data sovereignty, where does the data sit? And when data are read into a model, is the model viewed as data or is the model viewed as an application? Right, our view of it is models are viewed as data just because the data can, you know, integrate it into a GPT model. Well, that information is now accessible to anybody that has access to that model, right? And so models that have data incorporated into it should be treated like data. And so those constructs that the European Union has spent the last several years thinking about are really important, and I think they are on the right track. And I think companies that are thinking about how to do this, they have to do this in parallel while we still try to figure out a bunch of these other things. It's a journey. It's a journey, right? And so you think about what we've had to do over the last 20 years to protect the customer base, protect security and privacy, protect against hackers, protect all the things that we see today as entire industries for cybersecurity. Those will also develop in parallel while AI impact continues to grow. Right, and so my charge to many of the companies and CEOs of large companies is you actually won't have a point in time. It's not a binary point in time. When it hits this, I can go full on. That's not the way it will play out. It's going to be a journey where the security and privacy and data concerns will continue to grow while the AI transformation is happening. And so you have to pick a methodology for how you're going to actually invest in the technology and begin the journey for transforming the company to an AI-enabled one while these issues are being dealt with. And frankly, you have to be part. Right, companies have to be part of that discourse. Companies have to be part of that discussion. What does data privacy look like when it comes to AI? What does data security look like when it comes to AI? How do I do, you know, AI sharing of models and still handle those data security and privacy issues? And so someone has a point of view that gives you the flexibility and the opportunity to be able to deploy those in a certain way, right? But the regulations, both in the European Union, in Asia, and the United States, those are still evolving. And I think companies need to be part of that discussion, which then is going to be informed by their own experience as they deploy technologies.
The journeys that you're suggesting that companies need to go on doesn't sound like it's going to be a cheap one. How much of an issue is that, and how do people get around the fact that as data increases exponentially and their infrastructure expands, this is going to be costly? What's the solution?
Well, exactly the sample of a value proposition, because if you look at the trajectory that you see today with many of the folks, here's the answer that many of the folks that have tried it and now are trying to attack the data privacy and security concerns that have been exposed now through the last 12 months of different technologies being out there, is their answer is, let me go call up NVIDIA and buy a bunch of chips and build it myself. Right? That's the exact point you're making, that the buying the chips is only the beginning of the spending. Right? Because then you gotta buy all the system, buy the software, then you gotta hire hundreds of people who are incredibly expensive. These machine learning experts are incredibly expensive and hard to find if you find them. And then you have to take all of that time training these models that, as you see on the news, it takes years to train these models properly once you have all the data available to actually train them. And so the cost of doing it by yourself is just so high, but that's the alternative. You either use something that isn't as secure or as private as you need, and you have to expose your private data in order to get the accuracy of those models to be right. Or you have to do it from scratch. You have to do component by component, hire other people, and build the car starting with the spark plugs, right? And that's very, very expensive to do. And so what we decided to do at Sambonova was, how do we create technology that's accessible by all without having to incur that cost? And we assembled it all into a platform, hardware, software, not too different from the way that iPhones have created hardware and software so that you can just use. You don't need to know, right? What wireless chip do I use? Right? Which standard of cellular should I use? And which you don't need to know all those things. What iOS? What operating system should I use? And those are all pre-done so that we can give you a hot start. And the customization of that model for privacy and control is done in that final last 5-10% of the journey. That we give you this hot start when the machine shows up. All of this work is actually pre-done, and it's workable for us because we amortize that investment cost across hundreds of customers, right? Where otherwise you'd have to bear that cost by yourself by doing DIY.
Now, it's interesting. I was having a conversation with an academic last week who said to me, if you think about the gold rush, it wasn't the people who were looking for and finding gold who necessarily got rich. It was the people who were selling spades.
That's right. I mean, exactly. I mean, and nobody is a bigger example than Nvidia, right? Look at the valuation of this company, and you know, as somebody that's been in the chip industry for nearly 30 years, it's always great to see a chip company be in the circle of companies there in that trillion U.S. dollar market cap, right? It's great to see, and over the last few years, the world has now come back to appreciate semiconductors as a first citizen technology. and yet we live in a world today where I think you need those technologies, but many of the companies, if you don't invest in it, right, whether you're selling the tools for finding the gold or the ones finding the gold, it's better than not being in the rush at all.
Yeah, of
right?
course.
Right.
My question to you is going to be, I think listening to you, that meeting point of hardware, software, and a platform that you're giving to people, it sounds like you're selling them smart spades. Sounds like you're in a good place to be. How do you see the market developing? There's been some talk about an AI bull market. There's obviously a lot of interest. There's a lot of investment going on within AI, within data at the moment. How do you think the market's going to develop as the year continues?
Well, I think what we've seen now is last year was a year of education and a year of the early adopters, right? That you saw a lot of really, really great early adopters come in and produce some amazing solutions for AI. And also you saw the broad market get educated on what Gen AI could do. Right, and you've started seeing this towards the end of the year that the investments that companies were making, the Global 2000, the investment companies were making were now with a strategy behind it versus people that just saw the technology and say, I need to jump in quick. And so they just jumped in very aggressively. And those will have a lead in a lot of different ways. But now you've seen the broad wave of the enterprises come in and say, okay, I know exactly what I can do with OpenAI. I know exactly what I could do with Google and Microsoft. I know exactly what I can do with these other ones. And I also know what else is missing from what I want to do with AI, which I need to find solutions for. And so there is now a thesis for many of the companies on exactly where they start, what's available for them through the different vendors, and then frankly, how they're going to close the critical gaps. Because for us, our belief is that the mission critical nature of it, the business critical applications will be the most valuable places that company will deploy AI, the most valuable places. And so what we're starting to see now is people coming in and say, okay, well, I need to use AI for this because this gives me not just a little bit of money savings, which much of the AI has been focused on over the last 12 months, but what it does, it gives me a differentiated competitive advantage. And that's what will ultimately drive my ability to compete in my market, to find something through AI that's unique and differentiated, because that's value creation. That's value creation, and companies over the next 10 to 15 years will be differentiated by the value and the services they provide because they found a way to leverage the technology to bring better services to their customers and better products.
One final question then. If an enterprise leader is listening to this, obviously it's an area that everyone is trying to get their head around. What are the two things that you would suggest they need to think about right now?
First thing is they need to think about their data strategy as an asset, right? Most companies see their data as the most valuable asset they have, right? And so if you disclose that, everybody in the world, including the competitors, will see it. And so you have to have a strategy for how to actually leverage your data without disclosing it to everybody, normalizing it. And so that's something that most companies have to think about, and some of them certainly can help you with that. The second one is scale, that most businesses are incredibly complex in all the decisions that they have to do, right? You're multifaceted, you have multi-geographies, multiple languages, multiple product lines. Thinking about AI as a small, bespoke, individual model just to save a little money in one task is not sufficient. And so these large language models that GPT-4 have now created and people have tried through OpenAI and ChatGPT, incredibly valuable. You have to start thinking about AI as a foundational tool that applies across your entire business and finding one that allows you to actually build your company around, build your solutions and products and operation around. That will be one of the most important decisions you can make, because if you make the right choice there, you don't have to gut it up and redo it over and over and over again, which will be, which ultimately is what wastes time and money. And so if you think about the strategy of that and you're able to deploy this in a consistent way and grow and create value with AI for the next 10, 15 years, you're going to be in a leadership position.
Rodrigo, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today. Thank you for giving up some time this morning, and have a good week.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and looking forward to talking again.
Right, look, George, as we said, you're in India, so thank you for taking the time to jump on the call and have a listen to the interview. As I've stated before, you're actually technical. I'm not. It'd be very interesting to know what stood out to you. But for me, I think the key message was you are on a journey here, and we cannot wait for regulation. Because if you wait for regulation where AI is concerned, you're simply going to fall behind the competition.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. That was a really good message that came from Rodrigo that I think many enterprise leaders need to consider. Like many disruptive technologies, waiting until everybody else has joined the party is just too late. So, and it was really interesting how he approached that, and you asked some really good questions around about, you know, how can a company who is maybe very data rich, has seen the value of their data, and just wants to understand how they can leverage that in generative AI and AI in general. So I think the big takeaway for me, and we've been saying this to clients constantly, is that AI and generative AI is only as good as the data that powers it, and having a really strong data strategy is something that we would definitely recommend.
Now, look, he talks obviously about Sam and Over, and he talks about it offering you the option of full control. And then he talks up the challenges with regards to risks around data security, privacy, and the need to protect rather data from unauthorized access, leakage, or misuse. Obviously, he's going to talk those up because that positions Sam and Over very, very well. But when you're talking to clients and you are in that world, how much of a concern are those areas right now?
I've got to say it's one of the major talking points that we have with clients when they're considering the adoption of Gen AI. Clearly, there's the big cloud providers are providing a lot of relatively easy to use plug and play access to generative AI, and it's interesting that the big cloud players are continually updating their privacy and security statements. It's kind of come up their tree, as it were, in terms of other things like ethics and explainability. Now privacy and security is top billing, so we have to have a very robust conversation with clients to say, hey, perception is everything in this game, and the perception that the public cloud vendors are more or less risky is something they have to address, and therefore as a software company, we also have to address that head on. I think we you know, absolutely address that challenge. But Rodrigo makes a fair point. You know, we are in this kind of world of the unknown at the moment. We just don't know enough to say, hey, you know, this is without a doubt 100% secure and private. What I do think, though, Dave, is people are kind of going as if AI is somehow completely new. And you made a really good point about GDPR. We're going, hey, whilst it's a new disruptor technology, all the good practice still stands. So it's not like, hey, we've got to come up with a whole bunch of new methods and technologies to treat these. Just apply good practice and you should be okay.
Anything that surprised you? Because obviously this topic has been talked to death at the of late, and everyone is interested, rightly interested, because of the challenges. But anything kind of in the approach that was slightly unusual to the usual conversation?
So the concept of AI in a box effectively was, you know, the USP that was really interesting, and we personally have had some challenges and some debates with clients about, you know, do they actually go and buy NVIDIA chips? Do they buy infrastructure, put them in their data centres to guarantee security and guarantee compute? That's a fairly valid challenge, particularly on the compute side. I would have a, you know, I know where Rodrigo's coming from in terms of security, but particularly in terms of access to compute. At NASHTEC, we have clearly, you know, decided we want to, you know, understand and leverage AI, and some of our R&D projects have been around about fine-tuning. And we have personally found it very hard to get hold of compute, even from the big cloud providers. I won't mention the ones particularly, but we have literally said, hey, we will take any compute that you've got anywhere in the world to give us so we can run our own models, and they literally cannot give us them. So I think that, you know, that is a challenge, because we're all racing, we're all in the same race, we're all trying to get the same things. And as whilst there was a concept of infinite compute, turns out compute is finite in this space particularly. So that was interesting for me.
It's interesting you mentioned NVIDIA. I would say to anyone, if they've got some time, Wired have an interview with their CEO, Jensen Huang, that might be worth having a look at, titled NVIDIA Hardware is Eating the World. Basically, tech companies not getting enough of NVIDIA's products at the minute, with earnings going off the charts. So that might be some good additional reading.
Yeah, light read, but it's really good, though. It's a really good point. And the fact that everything comes full circle. In fact, you know, you and myself and Dave were at an event recently, and we talked about the pendulum effect in technology, where, you know, everything was in the cloud, and now we're seeing the pendulum swing back slightly. And it was interesting for a group of CTOs who were kind of going, really? Is that where we're going, George? We all said, you know, everything that goes up must come down, and every pendulum must swing. So it's interesting that it's all coming back full circle almost.
Thank you for taking the time to jump on. Rodrigo, thank you for being our guest. It is Monday from the podcast point of view, but as I said, we're recording on Friday. So George, enjoy your party. Take it easy on the Indians if they... if they're not familiar with whiskey.
or not fluent in Scots either. So, we'll see how that goes. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Have a great weekend and talk soon. Tech Talks is hosted and edited by David Savage. It is produced by Nash Squared. And we have special thanks to Lemzy for supplying music to this show.